and they will stamp your passport with a E2 visa, which is a teaching visa in Korea. While this is going on, we will be arranging a flight for you into Korea. And if everything goes well, you should be here. The interview to you arriving in Korea can happen within 3 to 4 weeks.
Hi there, thanks for joining us for this Skypecast brought to you by Ask Now, Access South Korea Now, and ETO English Teaching Opportunities. Hopefully you'll get some good information from this, and if you have any questions, always feel free to send us an email. Okay, so Chris has sent us a message asking about the process and the salary expectations. Maybe what I'll do is I'll address the salary expectations, and then I'll invite Brandt to address what the basic process is. So for the salary expectations, average starting salary would be about 2 million Korean won, and depending on the exchange rate, that might be somewhere around 22 to 2300 Canadian, somewhere around 2000 US. Maybe we'll get a better figure on that. But that would be the salary expectation. But the thing to take into consideration is that it's not just the amount of salary. You also have to take into consideration that one of the benefits is accommodations are provided. So that's usually one of the major expenses that people have, and if they don't have to deal with that expense of having to pay for the apartment, then that allows them to save a lot more. The other factor is cost of living, which is relatively, can be a little bit lower in Korea depending on your lifestyle. And another big consideration would be the taxation issue, where in Korea the tax rate is significantly lower than you know, in Canada, the U.S., or any other Western areas, so that allows you to save a lot of money as well. Basically, what I like to say is that if you just kind of live an average lifestyle, you can still have a lot of fun. But if you're somewhat dedicated to trying to save money, it's not unusual to be able to put aside about $1,000 Canadian a month, which is a pretty good chunk of money for if you're consistent with that. And what I'll do is I'll invite Brandt maybe to address the other part of the question that Chris asked, which was the process. So if you want to, maybe Brandt, if you can give him a breakdown of the process from application to getting to Korea, would you be able to do that for us?
I'll try.
All right.
Okay, usually the application will go directly to ASK. Jason or his sister Stacy will be handling most of the applications and initial interviews to kind of see if you are the right type of person to come to Korea for a year. And then once we receive your application and we kind of figure out your starting date, where the location you're looking for, etc., then we will start looking for schools, or we will use the list of schools that we have contacts with, and we will find the proper location, the proper date, and then we will set up an interview for you. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, that was some feedback there from somebody not on mute.
Okay. And after the interview, if you want to go forward with the position and the school is happy with the interview, they will send us a contract and we will look it over and then send it to you. And if you have any questions about the contract, usually the contracts are worded in a confusing manner, we will work out any questions, any disagreements, and usually the schools are willing to reword things or to fix things that were originally kind of a gray area in the contract. And after the contract is signed and completed, then you will send your documents to Korea. Your documents include your original degree, sealed transcripts from your university, a copy of your passport. The school will put everything into immigration in Korea for visa processing. That takes anywhere from 7 to 10 days, and when it's finished, a visa approval number will be released, and you take this along with an application and your passport to the nearest Korean consulate, and they will stamp your passport with a E2 visa, which is a teaching visa in Korea. While this is going on, we will be arranging a flight for you into Korea, and if everything goes well, you should be here from, if we do things quickly and things work out well, from the interview to you arriving in Korea can happen within 3 to 4 weeks. Sometimes it does take a little bit longer, but that is kind of the target for everybody, I think, involved. I think it gives time for the teachers to kind of say goodbye to friends and family, and it gives everybody time to get everything legal. We do want you to be able to come to Korea legally with a visa, and have the school kind of have everything ready for you. I know a lot of places are kind of more into the rush jobs where things like that aren't as important beforehand. There are times when the teacher wants to come a little faster or the school needs a teacher faster, and we can work something out that way as well. I hope that covered everything.
I think so. That was a very good description. I think one of the important things to outline there is if anybody had to repeat that and explain it to somebody else, it would be very difficult for them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of having us here, is that mm-hmm. we're able to walk people through the whole process, because the process, as you outline right there, is pretty complex, right? There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff to do. There's a lot of things you need to know. There's a lot of things you need to have. But what happens in that process is that we're there kind of every step of the way, and we basically try to tell people exactly what to do, when they need to do it, and try to give them, you know, not too much information at any one time, but just give them the information they need to accomplish the next step. And when you're actually going through the process, it makes a lot more sense. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. In that, a lot of the things in timing and what to expect, it's kind of hard to figure out until you actually been through the process.
I think we have a question coming. I'm just going to unmute somebody here.
Okay.
Did you have a question? I'm going to bring Matthew in with a question in regards to basically just living in South Korea and some of the activities that are available, maybe some of the activities that he's actually involved in or that people can get involved in as foreigners, maybe sporting activities or tourism and that kind of stuff. Maybe Matt, you can talk about that a little bit for us.
Sure. Am I in here, Jason?
Yeah, you're good to go ahead.
Okay. I guess there are just so many things you can do here. There are so many people and a lot of different interests. So pretty much whatever you're interested in, you can find it here. As far as being active, first of all, pretty much wherever you live, you'll be living near a mountain, and people enjoy climbing the mountains. We even used to do a lot of biking in the mountains. It's just quite fun, refreshing to do that. As far as organized activities, there are many things available. I remember I came here 4 years ago. I'm Canadian, and I was interested in ice hockey, and I thought, okay, I won't find any of that here. I didn't have anything. But as it turns out, it is organized hockey. You can get involved in a team. As well, I'm involved in I'm on a soccer team, and there's quite a competitive league in Seoul. Even in Daegu, which is south, about 4 hours south in another area, there is a league too. It's not quite as organized as the Seoul one, but it is. There is something, and that's whatever your level. I mean, I know that I like to be in something quite competitive, and it's available. The way to look for it, there are a lot of different sources in trying to find people who organize these things. certainly we can help you find somebody to contact to get involved. A lot of things that happen around here is people do like to get involved in clubs. So that means if you like to inline skate, you can certainly just, like we used to, just cruise around the city if you like, or you can go to particular parks to go skating. And if you want to meet people and get involved, you can find an inline skating club, for example, and people meet regularly and go and enjoy the skating and whatever else they do. I'm not sure exactly what they do in that club. The same thing with any other activity that you enjoy, right? I don't know. You know, I would imagine. I imagine people, if you like frisbee or something, they're frisbee club. I would guess. I'm not involved in that myself, but these kind of things. So, of course, around in Seoul, there's the Han River, and in other cities there are. There are generally some kind of a river area, and this is a good place again to inline, to bike, to go have a picnic, to go, you know, enjoy throwing a ball around, doing whatever you like to do. That's basically as far as activities. You can go anywhere. There's like I said, mountains, rivers available, and there are the organized paths as well, where you can get involved in an organized league. Generally with foreigners, but of course there are also ones where Koreans, of course, are getting involved in many things.
Can direct you towards perhaps speaking about what it's like as a foreigner to travel around the country if you wanted to do some sightseeing, some touristing, as far as how difficult is it and how expensive is it to, you know, on a weekend, go for a weekend trip or do those kind of things.
Okay.
How accessible or unaccessible is that?
Difficult, not very. Expensive, not very. Accessible, very. It is, one thing you'll find just being anywhere is transportation is just fantastic in Korea. And that means within your city, you know, whether buses, subways, taxi cabs, everything is cheap, available, easy. It's never a problem. That also includes getting around the country. You can go anywhere on the cheaper end. Maybe you could get to, if I wanted to go to Daegu from Seoul, that's a 4-hour drive, and that's pretty much north to south almost in this country. You can, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe around $10 or so, get on a bus, and then you're gone. You're gone to, you know, the southern part of the country.
Well, it depends on the bus, but it'd be maybe closer to 20 now, I believe. But yeah,
you're
right.
Okay. The reason I'm a little off on that is because the last time I took a bus was 4 years ago, because nowadays I just take the KTX train, which is the high-speed train, which gets me to Daegu in about an hour and 40 minutes, sometimes an hour and 50 minutes. It's been as low as an hour and a half at times. The comfort and the convenience of it is just fantastic. And that'll be around, to get from Seoul to Daegu is about 38,000 won, $40, say. Which is, you know, that sounds obviously a lot more expensive than a bus, but I mean, it cuts the time in more than half. And it's a lot more comfortable you know, you're not depending on traffic on the roads and this kind of thing, varying your time. And there's also another train, which is a slower train, which is obviously much cheaper. I don't know about Seoul to Daegu, to be honest, but it would be significantly cheaper. And that's again just a regular kind of train that goes there that just doesn't go at 300 kilometers per hour. You know, so there are a lot of options to get to places around. Buses going to every place you're going to want to get to, and trains going there as well. Cheap and quick. So if you were going to go and say you want to take advantage of one of your weekends and visit another part of the country, it would not be as big a production as it might be at home as far as preparation. You can choose to go on the Friday night or on the Saturday and just kind of go, find a place, get there. And when you do get there, you know, you normally have to worry about preparing a hotel or a place to stay or something. But again, things are things are a lot cheaper. There are many options again of range of accommodations that you can take, and you won't have to prepare in advance. You can basically go somewhere and find a place to stay. And
I would argue that that's part of the adventure as well, is just going out and saying, okay, we're just going to head to some place this weekend, and we're not sure exactly where it is, and we're not sure exactly where we're going, and we're not sure where we're going to stay, but we're just going to go and check it out. And that's kind of part of the adventure, that is that you can just go out and try to find something and kind of wing it, and that seems to be even funner than planning. So what I'm going to do now, I think I'm going to just shift gears a little bit, and I wouldn't mind if I can get Brant to tell us a little bit about accommodations and what people can expect, what the different types of accommodations that teachers would expect to be living in, and just a little bit about the housing. If Brant, I can bring you in on that.
Okay, about housing, can you guys hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. Housing is usually, in Korea they call it a single, which would be Western equivalent of a studio apartment. That's for a single teacher, and that's the standard accommodations nowadays for most schools. It is small by Western, you know, conditions, since it is a studio apartment, and it will come fully furnished with a bed, TV, refrigerator, washing machine. Usually air conditioning is now almost a given now, and a desk, chairs, etc. So you won't need to make any big purchases when you're in Korea for housing. For couples and certain schools, they will have shared housing, which will be a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment. A lot of teachers who are single don't want shared housing, but the advantage of that is it is much larger, and meaning that you will have your own bedroom, and then there will be a living room area, a separate kitchen area. So you're looking at an apartment that is about 2.5 times bigger than what a single apartment would be. But of course, the downside is that you are sharing with someone. Of course, if you're married, you probably want that, so that should work out. But housing gets better the farther away you're from Seoul, usually, and the farther away you're from the big cities. If you're in Seoul, housing tends to be older apartments, so they're a little bit not as nice as...
Hello? I don't know if we... Yep. Oh. Did we lose you then? Or did you just see everybody disappear and you were...
Yeah, I just saw everybody disappear, so I...
Yeah, no, I think it just refreshes itself every once in a while, but everybody's still there.
All right. Apartments in Seoul are older just because the city in general is older. So they're kind of not as clean as apartments you would find outside of Seoul. Usually in the suburbs are all within about... built in the past probably 10 years, so you're going to see brand new apartments which are clean, the design's a lot better, etc. But if you're in the major cities, the housing is a bit older and a bit smaller, so it's something to consider when you want to come to Korea about where you want to go. I've seen some schools like in smaller cities, and they offer 2-bedroom housing for a single teacher because the rent's so much cheaper there than it is in Seoul. I think that people kind of don't realize the real estate prices in Korea. In Seoul, like, I think a 3-bedroom apartment goes for close to $1 million US now.
it's so difficult to comprehend that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's insane how expensive housing is. So I get a lot of requests from teachers, can I get bigger housing, can I do this, and the answer is generally no, because the school really can't afford it. Mm-hmm. How the rent system works in Korea is there's a huge down payment of several thousand dollars, and then there's a monthly rent. Even for a single apartment in Seoul, it comes out to about a $5,000 to $10,000 deposit with about $400 to $500 a month for rent, just for a studio apartment. Anything bigger, of course, goes up substantially, so it is a very big investment for the school.
So people have to understand that there is a definite difference, and I think that kind of leads us, you're touched on it a little bit, and I think it would be a good idea for us to talk a little bit about the different areas. And I'm also, just before I go into that, I'll just invite anybody who does have a specific question can just either send me the question via chat by clicking on the, over to the right of the host name, there's a chat button there, and you can send a chat question, or I believe you could send a, if you click on the little speaker next to you, you can ask a question, which I believe New to Mac might be doing right now. So I'm gonna see if we have a New to Mac question. Hi, did you have a question?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about how much you are paying?
Sure. Yep. We will readdress that. Basically, the salary in Korean won would be about 2 million Korean won a month, which it's about 2,200, how much is that in America, in U.S. dollars, Brent? You know, it's about 2,200, 2,300 in Canadian, I'm guessing.
U.S. nowadays, it comes out to a little bit more than $2,000 U.S.
Okay, so a little bit more than 2,000 U.S., depending on the exchange rate. And then beyond that, the apartment is paid for, and the flight is paid for, and also the tax is also the advantage there, isn't it? There's a significantly lower tax rate.
And after the contract ends, do I get a bonus?
That's correct. There's a bonus equal to 1 month's salary. So basically, your last month's pay is double the normal pay.
Yeah. The guys in Hong Kong are offering better.
Yeah, what are they offering?
3,500 yuan.
3,500 US, and do they provide the housing as well? What are their requirements?
Just a BA.
Do you know much about the Hong Kong market, Brent?
Not about
yes,
the Hong
I
Kong
know.
Market. I don't know that much about the Hong Kong market. I do know some about the Taiwan market and the Chinese market in general. And from what I've seen in mainland China, the overall pay is lower. In Taiwan, it's similar to Korea, but then the cost of living is much higher. I would imagine that the Hong Kong cost of living for Westerners might also be higher. And I don't really know the living conditions in Hong Kong. I've been there a couple times, but it was visiting and not actual living, so I can't really give a judgment on that.
Yeah, if it's anything like the Japanese situation, again, it's a good situation. The pay is higher, but when you factor in the cost of living, then the amount that you're able to save diminishes significantly. But maybe New to Mac, do you have any more details on that? It is an interesting thing. Do you know how much one would expect to save living in Hong Kong and teaching in Hong Kong?
No, I don't know the kind of living there.
Okay. So you're not living there now, are you?
No.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a good question. Actually, it's something that I'm going to look into a little bit further, because I know a lot of, you know, kind of like what Brant said, the main places that are somewhat comparable or similar or compared are, you know, mainland China, Taiwan, Japan, and those types of places. And for those, in general, the Korean experience is usually a little bit more competitive as far as the ability to save money, and then from there it's more of a preference of where do you want to live and what kind of experience do you want to have. But as for Hong Kong, yeah, I don't know too much about it, but I'm going to look into it a little bit more. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Did you have any other specific questions?
No, that's about it.
Okay, well, I'll put you back on mute, and if you do have another question that pops up, please do ask it. It's good to stimulate the conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And so what I was wanting to lead into also there, the since we're kind of on the topic of geography, would be the difference in different cities. And the way I break it down is you've got Seoul, and then you've got suburbs of Seoul, and then you've got major cities and smaller cities. And each of them have their advantages and disadvantages, and Brant was talking about that a little bit. Maybe I'll get Brant to go in a little bit more detail for each one of those categories. So you've got Seoul, which we kind of went into, and basically it's the biggest city in Korea, and it's got a lot of stuff going on. It's pretty exciting, and it's busy, but it is more expensive for people to live there as far as apartments go, and you know, your accommodations are generally not going to be as large or new as other cities. And then how would you describe the satellites of Seoul, Brant?
Well, Seoul, I think people can kind of imagine, if you think about like a downtown area of a major city in the U.S. or Canada, that's kind of what Seoul is. You know, you see the skyscrapers and whatnot. When most people think about the idea of suburbs, they think of a completely kind of residential area, just houses and not much else. I grew up in the suburbs of the States, and when anybody mentions suburbs, that's what I imagine as well. But the suburbs in Korea are very well developed. If you ever get a chance to drive through Seoul and drive through the suburbs, you're going to notice a major difference if you're actually physically driving a car, where the roads are wider. And that's because these suburbs are planned from start to finish, whereas Seoul just kind of grew over time. These suburbs are much better in that everything is well located, everything is pretty convenient. For whatever teachers that come to the suburbs, it's only, you know, usually about 30 minutes into Seoul at most. So for distance-wise into Seoul, they kind of like it, and it's a lot quieter, less pollution. But some people like the hustle and bustle of the big city, and for that, Seoul is the best option.
I was just going to say that when we talk about suburbs, you brought up a good point that it's easy for us, having been in Korea and you know, seeing things, to imagine, we know exactly what we're talking about. But if I were to have never been to Korea and like you said, if I were thinking of suburb, I would be considering and imagining something totally different from what it actually is, right? It is a lot more city-like than you know. It's not individual houses in a neighborhood with everybody has their own driveway and that kind of thing. It's still very city-like, and probably depending on what area somebody comes from, you know, the suburb of Seoul would probably be, you know, more hectic and have more stuff going on than a city, you know, like an average-sized Canadian city. So yeah. I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. That is, you know, if you're going to one of these suburbs, you're not going to a residential neighborhood like you would expect in the U.S. or Canada.
Yeah. Pretty much all of the options of things to do in Korea you can find almost anywhere in any city. Every suburb, every city has like a nightlife. I think the biggest concern for a lot of teachers is, you know, is there something for me to do at night? Am I going to be walking around and like people are going to be walking their dog and that's all I'm going to see? And in the suburbs, it's not. Every, you know, suburbs will have kind of their own downtown area with restaurants, with bars, with this and that. So if you're living in the suburbs, you're not completely shutting yourself out from civilization.
Right.
And this is something that a lot of Westerners don't kind of realize, but the suburbs are better suited for Westerners in that there are more things that cater to Westerners. Nowadays, pretty much the upper-class Koreans are all moving to the suburbs because the housing is better, because there's less pollution, because the school system is better. And because of that, you see a lot of stores and restaurants geared toward Westerners, in that these upper-class Koreans are the ones who travel abroad, are the ones who travel and study in the U.S. or in Canada or in Australia or England and whatnot. So they're the ones who want these things. Whereas the average neighborhood in Seoul, you're not going to be able to find these things because the average Korean has never traveled abroad.
Mm-hmm.
They've never had the opportunity to go to a different country and to experience different foods and whatnot. So I think where I live in the suburbs, and the teachers that are in my area, when they go to the local Walmart, they're shocked at the selection of foods that they can get. I think my Canadian teachers are always looking for Kraft dinner. and that's something that you can find here, and which the average teacher in Seoul won't be able to find at a store nearby. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the discrepancy. There are, of course, those areas in Seoul that are even more westernized, but chances are, you know, that's not where you're going to be placed, because those areas will have kind of a different standard for the teachers they pick.
Yeah.
That's something that I think we can talk about some other time, but I think if you go to the suburbs, you're not really missing out on too much, because everything is kind of a big city. I guess the best way to describe the suburbs would be kind of the outer area of a major city,
right,
instead of the actual suburbs of a major city. So you're not in the downtown area, but you know, you are still in that city. So I think that's the best way to describe it. As for other major cities, I've been to a couple. I don't remember much, though. But I think Busan is probably the closest, comparably in size and development, to Seoul. I think Daegu would be next, and then Daejeon has a reputation for being kind of the Silicon Valley of Korea, but it's kind of also a slower city where it doesn't have as much, as many people in a rush, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have cities such as Gwangju and Incheon, and these are all considered major cities as well in Korea. I think when we get a request from teachers for smaller areas like towns and whatnot, I think that's something that's almost starting to disappear in Korea, where if you see population centers, they are all very urbanized.
Yes.
And the way that the cities are broken down in Korea by neighborhood, even if you're in a city like Jinju, which is like population 250,000, it feels the same as being in Seoul. When you look around, the buildings, the type of buildings are the same. The number of people are almost the same. It's just the overall area that that city covers is smaller, but the development of that city is almost the same. So I think that for, you know, teachers who are area-specific, when you do that, you should be more kind of on what you want geography-wise. And then what you want, like, you know, do I want to be in an urban area? Because if you notice, Korea is all urbanized. A lot of people think that it's, you know, a lot of people still get the feeling when they hear Korea that it's kind of a third world country. But, you know, it's actually the way Koreans are, their use of technology is a lot more modern than a lot of other countries are.
Definitely much more advanced and, you know, higher use of of high-speed internet, higher use of cell phone, and all that kind of stuff. And it is, you know, a good point that a lot of times you can be in kind of any of the major Korean cities, and if you were to just be blindfolded and dropped into one of the cities as a foreigner, you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a lot of them, because there's a lot of similarities. So, you know, when people are looking at, you know, where should I go, I like to think that it's a good idea to be open. Personally, I've lived in, you know, I've lived in Daegu, I've lived in Daejeon, I've lived in Seoul, and that's, you know, and I've been to, you know, pretty much every other city and a lot of places in between. And I think that depending on your attitude, you can enjoy yourself and find fun stuff to do no matter which one of these places you go to. You can always find, you know, there's always, if you're looking for a group of foreigners, if you want to, you know, keep your English surroundings, and there's always going to be a group of foreigners in any city that you go to. And then also, if you're looking for cultural things, each city has their own, you know, cultural things that you can get involved with. And if you're looking, you know, just to get involved in Korean, well, that's obviously easy. Than everywhere you go, there's the Korean aspect of things. So I think that the best thing to do is to really keep an open mind about where you want to go, and not just think. I think maybe a lot of the information that's available is just about Seoul and about Busan, but there's a lot going on in other cities as well. So as somebody coming to Korea for the first time, I can see that, you know, you'd be thinking, well, there's Seoul, and then it's you know, rice fields or something like that. But it's far from that, and any of these cities have a lot to offer, and you can do a lot of whatever you want to do in each one of the cities.
And
so now,
Something that I noticed about Westerners in Korea is that Westerners in Seoul. Or Koreans in Seoul are kind of desensitized to Westerners, to foreigners. But if you are a foreigner in a smaller city, I've noticed that everybody is a lot friendlier to you. Because it is kind of a rare thing for them to see, whereas in Seoul, you know, nowadays if you're walking down the street, sometimes you get a sense that there are more foreigners there than Koreans. But in the smaller cities, I've noticed, like, the teachers that I play said, they're always just telling me that, God, everybody's so friendly here. Whereas the teachers that I play in Seoul, they're like, God, Koreans are so rude. So I think it's kind of on, you know, the sheer number of people going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then you kind of touched on two good points there with the friendliness and the being kind of popular and standing out with being in a smaller city. I think if I were to ask Matthew, which I will, about his experience being in Seoul, of, you know, how much does he stand out? And then so that's a really good point. If you're in a smaller place, then, you know, you do have that fun of being kind of a novelty and getting to enjoy that popularity, and like you said, having everybody be friendly. And just a quick point on the rudeness, I think what people have to realize when they come to Korea as well is that there are a lot of people in Seoul, and Korean people are just so used to living in such a densely populated area that, you know, bumping into each other and a little bit of pushing and shoving, and it really doesn't bother them, right? It's, you know,
yeah,
it's just part of the daily thing. Is you just, everybody's in a hurry, everybody knows that there's a lot of people, everybody knows that you're going to get bumped into, and people are in a rush and they'll push, and you just got to let that kind of stuff slide, or else you're going to be, you know, not having a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the same thing goes for any country. For example, if someone from Korea went to New York City, and they'd go, God, Americans are so rude. You know, but it's just the big city mentality. In any major city, you are going to see that, and it doesn't reflect the, you know, populace as a whole. It's just the people in that city live that way because, you know, that's kind of how you survive in a big city, I think. Whereas if you're in smaller areas, it is a lot different. People are a lot more accommodating because, you know, it's the kind of the atmosphere and the mentality of that area. So I think that's something that people have to take into consideration when they are in Korea. I had one of the first teachers that I had in Korea, they were from a very small city in Nova Scotia. I think the population was like several thousand. And when they came to Korea, they went to a smaller suburb in of Seoul, and they felt that it was a very big city, and they kind of refused to go into Seoul because it was too overwhelming for them. So I think it kind of goes back and forth on where you grew up. I have people, you know, who come from major cities going to Seoul, and they're like, it's nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I have people, you know, from smaller cities going into Seoul, and then they say, you know, Koreans are very rude or this and that. And it's just kind of on how you perceive things. Mm-hmm. If you just accept that little bit that you get from, you know, people in Seoul, then yeah, that is how you're going to perceive Koreans. But you know, there is a big picture involved to everything.
Definitely, definitely. Maybe I'm going to ask Matthew how his experience living in Seoul is as far as standing out as being a foreigner, if anybody notices him and that kind of stuff. Or Matt, can you speak to that a bit?
I can speak to it. Okay. Well, what I find, what a lot of foreigners find in general is when they come to Korea. Right now, obviously, there's a large population, and it's mostly Korean. If you were from a country like USA or Canada, it's especially in bigger cities, you see people of every ethnicity. You go to Toronto, any major city in the States, there are people of every ethnicity. But here, it's still quite homogeneous, and foreigners do stand out. Now, as Brad mentioned, in Seoul, people are a little more desensitized to it. They kind of don't really look twice, but you go show up in a smaller town again, and you'll notice you'll get people turning their heads, kids shamelessly staring at you, right? And it's kind of interesting anyway. But what a lot of foreigners actually enjoy, and this is why a lot of people stay around, is that they do become very popular. People have an idea that a foreign face with the large, you know, pronounced noses and bigger eyes and everything is very attractive to them. And without trying to, you know, sound like some kind of pimp or something, right? I mean, people who are maybe not so popular in their native countries come to Korea and find that they're a lot more popular and attractive looking to the women. And even, I mean, men are not shy to tell you that you're handsome. It's the first thing a guy said to me when I arrived in Korea 4 years ago. I got off the plane, and the people came to pick me up, and there was a girl from the school, and the taxi driver said something to her. He says you're very handsome. I was like, okay, this place is great. All right, you know. And it happens a lot. People just will tell you, you're handsome. And that's it. And it's like, wow. Well, there you go. Geez, I like hanging out here a little bit, and it's that way with a lot of people. So that's my own experience, and that's a lot of foreigners' experiences. They kind of achieve some kind of new status in the way of being noticed, and it feels pretty good to a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else you're looking for today?
No, that's pretty much what I was looking for, and yeah. Also just the difference between living in Seoul and living in a smaller place where you are walking down the street, you know, even in Daegu. I lived in Daegu. The first time I came to Korea, it was in 1999, and it was, like, if I were to be walking down the street, it would be definitely 100% that every day some group of kids was going to say hi to me and kind of point and be shocked about seeing, you know, a non-Korean person. But now, I'm back in Daegu right now, and this, you know, 2006, and it's a little bit different. Like, the people are getting a little bit more used to foreigners being here. So in order to get that that reaction, you have to go to a little bit of a smaller place, and then that happens again. But it is interesting to see the difference between, you know, Seoul and other cities. And as you said, it's kind of a good feeling to be, you know, a little bit of the star of the show, and that's what a lot of people are looking for, I think. They're looking to be in a different culture and to stand out. They're looking for something different, and that's something that Korea can offer them, is the ability to be in a different place and to almost start a new chapter in their life. That's something I think Matt's good about, or good at talking about, is the, you know, starting a new chapter in your life. And I'm gonna put him on the spot again and get him to talk about what that's all about.
Here I am. Am I?
Oh. Yes, you're on.
Starting a new chapter. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of people I saw on that other guy's website who talked about us. He talked about perspective, and that's basically what I tend to talk about with my friends and people that I talk to about this. Is where, you know, I've been living in Canada for a long time, and people who have never really been out of the country kind of have one idea of what life is about, what life should be, and really, you heard people say, "Oh, you don't know until you see. You have to travel to see different things," and it's exactly true. I noticed that after I came here, I kind of learned more that it wasn't about the life that I had known. That there's a different way to do things, and that it was now up to me as an individual to look at the situation and decide what about this is good. What about it is not so good, and what about this is different from home, and is it better or worse than how things are done at home? And it basically became, well, now I get to decide how I want to live my life. And that's what I mean by perspective. It gave me a different view to look and a different perspective to evaluate and judge for myself now. So I kind of became more of a, it was kind of easier to do things for myself or to think for myself, I found, without kind of the same influences that I've had since I was younger, not allowing me to kind of think in different directions. I mean, no, I shouldn't say not allowing. Of course you can do that, but it is a lot harder when you have the same things going on around you all the time. So you come here and all of a sudden you're I don't want to say you're by yourself, like you're just totally, like you're not going to have any friends or anything, but you're on your own in the way of, it's up to you to choose who you want to associate with, what you want to do with yourself, and it's kind of it's a way to mature quite quickly, I find, being away from home like this, and I really made big steps in my life after having been here, as far as deciding that, wow, you know what, I really can do anything. If I can come here and do this, if it's possible for me to come to South Korea, why couldn't I go and do that anywhere else? So I can just do whatever I want. There's no rules about I have to go up here, get this job, go do this, have my family here, and all this. Right? It's quite exciting and liberating too. So
I would definitely agree that it's a feeling of you get a feeling of independence, especially for people who are recent graduates just coming out of school. Like Matthew said, probably have not been too far away from home, and then all of a sudden they're transplanted to the middle of a new world, and able to be in a totally independent and you know, just all of a sudden in a new area, and now they get this feeling of confidence that, hey, I can. You know, I can move to Korea. If I can move to Korea, then why can't I move to Japan? And why can't I move to Thailand? And why can't I do this and that? So all of a sudden, you are independent of, you know, independent of your parents, independent of your country, and you're feeling like you can do bigger things than maybe you thought you could. So, what one thing to make sure of is to be the right person for the job, and I'm going to call on Brant to maybe address what kind of personality somebody should have if they're considering coming to teach in Korea, and maybe what kind of thing, you know, personalities would maybe not be the right fit. Can I put you on the spot with that, Brant?
Sorry, I was on mute. I think for people who want to come and live in Korea for a year, I think having kind of an open mind about everything is the biggest thing, because Koreans are different, and you're not going to get the entire country of Korea to conform to Western standards for everything. So you should kind of realize that things are different here. I grew up in the U.S., and I kind of have a hard time going, hey, what's that? That's kind of weird. But you should realize that that is just how Koreans are, and you shouldn't take it too negatively. There are a lot of things about Korean culture that are, you know, I think are kind of better than, you know, American culture, and then there are a lot of things that I think could be better if worked on. But you do have to keep an open mind. If you look at negative things, or if you look for negative things, you know, it's going to be a nonstop thing when you're in Korea. You're going to hate everything about Korea. But then, you know, these are the type of people, you put them anywhere in the world, and they're going to hate everything about that too. But if you really have an open mind, kind of all these strange things that you see, if you have a good personality, you know, you'll laugh it off. I think I know a lot of things that I've seen. I just laugh it off, saying, you know, that's kind of strange. I wonder why they do that. if you watch Korean TV, you're just going to see a lot of slapstick comedy. But it's silly, and for a lot of people, you know, it can be offensive. But, you know, just don't take things too seriously while you're here. You know, a lot of Koreans are trying to expose you to Korean culture. They don't really want to, you know, force you to change into it. But, you know, they're exposing you to it. And I think a lot of how Korean culture has changed in the past 20 years because of Western influence. And you're going to see that. But honestly, the best thing to have is an open mind about everything while you're here, about what you eat, how you play, you know, just walking down the street and how you taste things. It is very different in Korea.
This call is being recorded.
But if you are, you know, if you have an open mind, it's a great experience. I'm not the most positive person in the world, and I like to nitpick about things as well, but, you know, I realize that I can't change everything about Korea, so I just accept it, and I just kind of, you know, roll with the flow, and if you do that, you're going to have a great time here.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Good summary on it. I mean, like you said, the number one thing to enjoy your time here is to have an open mind. Right now, we've just gone over the 1 hour mark. What I'm thinking of doing is maybe, you know, closing down the presentation for now. And we will invite anybody who has a question, if they wanted to, you know, do that, be happy to address the question. And otherwise, I think maybe we can say that that'll be it for now. The best thing to do to get any information would be to visit our website at www.asknow.ca, asknow.ca,